So you're an entrepreneur that started a successful business. Now, would you like to sell it for millions of dollars? Well, how do you do that? Let's find out in today's show.
Do you want to do what you want? Do you want better money? Welcome to Dream Job Radio.
Hi, this is Daniel Laxtons, and you're listening to the Dream Job Radio Show. Now, are you interested in selling your business? If you're building a business, if you're an entrepreneur that's building a business, are you thinking about selling it? So today I have a special guest. She is an acquisition specialist. Her name is Michelle Seiler Tucker, and she's the founder and CEO of Seiler Tucker Incorporated. Now, she's a distinguished speaker, an author, of course, a M&A expert, and she's been featured in magazines like Inc., Forbes, Entrepreneur, and USA Magazine. And she's an international keynote speaker, makes regular appearances on radio and TV shows, and she's been on Fox Business News and CNBC. So let's look into my interview with Michelle Seiler Tucker.
And so, Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Daniel. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you on the show because a lot of entrepreneurs, inspiring entrepreneurs, are trying to figure out how to build a business, but you bring something extra to the table. You're talking about when you're building a business, you have to think about what's going to happen maybe 3 years from now or 5 years from now. But before we get into talking about that, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? How did you originally get into mergers and acquisitions?
Yeah, so I'm just going to give you the quick story because, you know, I'd rather spend our time talking about valuable content for all of your listeners. So my quick story is I've always been an entrepreneur. I own many businesses in different verticals. I did go to work for corporate America for Xerox for a short period of time, left Xerox, went into franchise sales, franchise consulting, franchise development, and really got tired of saying no, no, no when buyers would ask me, do you have an existing business to buy? They didn't want to buy a franchise. And my big thing is in the universe, you should always say yes, yes, yes. So I decided to open up my own mergers and acquisitions firm. And that was a little over 20 years ago. Since we have sold over 1,000 businesses, we've done thousands upon thousands of valuations. I specialize in buying businesses, flipping them. I specialize in partnering with business owners, investing my money, my time, energy, resources, expertise. And we obviously merge businesses and sell businesses. And I fix businesses and grow them because what Steve Forbes says is true. 80% of businesses do not sell. 8 out of 10 businesses will not sell. So that's why I wrote Exit Rich. Steve Forbes has endorsed Exit Rich. And that's kind of why I really spend time fixing businesses, growing businesses, putting them on the build to sell model, because most businesses are not sellable for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, I'm thinking SOPs. So that's awesome. That's amazing. That's got to be an exciting journey that you've been on. And think about that too.
It is. It's a lot of ups and downs. Never a dull moment, but it is exciting. Yep.
So there's different types of businesses. Can you tell us why it's important to know what type of business that you own?
Well, it is because, you know, there are different types of businesses. There's what I call the dreamer businesses. And these are the entrepreneurs that leave corporate America and are going to go open up a coffee shop on a street where there's 5 other coffee shops. And they don't really do their research. They don't do their due diligence. They, you know, don't have enough working capital to sustain them. And the street can't support 5 coffee shops. So I call those the dreamer type businesses. And the reason for that is because I don't know if you remember the movie Field of Dreams, but the whole, you know, preface, the whole intent behind that movie was build it and it will come. There is no such thing as build a business and they will come. There's a lot of work to building the business and there's a lot of work to getting them to come, to get the clients to come.
Yes,
so that's the dreamer business. And then you have the business that's dependent upon the owners. You know, if the business is 1,000% dependent upon the owner, then the business typically is not sellable. And then you have the businesses that have been in business for a period of time that are doing really well. And then, you know, you got middle market businesses. So everybody can go to SeilerTuckerAcademy.com and take what type of business do I own and also take the 6P quiz.
This is great. So our listeners know that if you have a worksheet to do, it's a lot easier to keep your, to really learn something quickly by working a worksheet. So that's brilliant. You know, and I just mentioned real briefly that when I was 21, my buddy and I got some money and opened up a pool hall. And, you know, I guess the business plan wasn't written well when you're at that age, because we only had four pool tables and we're charging $5 an hour. Well, that wouldn't even cover one salary of one of the owners. So, so that's, I can see what you're getting at too. So I'm sure you've heard a lot of stories like that. So, but that was our mistake with the Rack and Q was our pool hall's name. But what are some big mistakes that you see other business owners make?
Okay, so let me give you a little history, a little history lesson here. So I wrote my first book, Sell Your Business for More Than It's Worth, in 2013. When I wrote that book, I did the research and learned that 95% of all startups within the first 1 to 5 years would go out of business, right? We all know that. That's common knowledge. But here's what's not common knowledge. Here's what most people don't know. When I wrote Exit Rich in 2019, 2020 with my co-author, Sharon Lecter, I did the exact same research and realized that the business landscape has actually flip-flopped. So now it's only 30% of startups will go out of business. So startup world should be excited and happy because only 30% are at risk of going out of business. However, out of 27.6 million companies, those companies that have been around for 10 years or longer, 70% of those businesses will go out of business. 70%.
Wow.
So it's actually flip-flopped. So the reason for that, well, let me back up. You probably hear about the big public companies going out of business. Toys R Us in business 75 years goes out of business. Kmart, JCPenney's, Pier One, Steinmart, GNC closing down 900 locations, Godiva Chocolate closing down 1,500 locations.
Whoa.
But that's what you hear in the media. What you're not hearing about are the private businesses, which are really the backbone of this of our U.S. economy, employing over half the U.S. workforce. These businesses are dropping like flies. They're exiting poor. They're selling for pennies on the dollar, going out of business, or filing bankruptcy. So the number one mistake that business owners make, and that's why I wanted to give you a little history, is they stop doing what I call AIM. AIM, A-I-M.
AIM.
AIM is always innovate and market. They stop innovating, they stop marketing. So one of the biggest mistakes that business owners make is they stop innovating, they stop marketing. Another big mistake is they never plan their exit strategy. They don't think about selling until a catastrophic event has occurred, internal or external. Internal could be health issues, partner disputes, divorce, death, business not doing well, you know. Externals, storms, you know, hurricanes, COVID. And that's the worst time to sell your business because your business is typically not doing well and 8 out of 10 businesses won't sell.
Like selling your stock when the market's going down. Bad idea.
Plan your exit from day one of buying or starting a company. Okay, two big mistakes. Here's another mistake for you. And I could just write a book on the mistakes that business owners make.
Yeah.
But here's another mistake. The business owner's working in their business, not on their business. So the business is 1,000% dependent upon them. And your business is not sellable because if your business can't operate without you, then in all likelihood, you have created a job that you go to work at every day versus a business that works for you, and buyers are not interested in buying your job.
Yeah. How will you ever get on a yacht, your personal yacht, if the business won't run by itself, right?
Right. Well, how will you get on a yacht, and then how will you sell that business one day if it can't run without you? And then the other mistake is that the business owners don't build a solid infrastructure. They're so focused on sell, sell, sells, grow, 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 but they don't have the solid infrastructure in which to handle the growth and be sustainable and scalable. So they don't operate on what I call in Exit Rich, the six Ps, the ST six Ps.
I love it. Exit Rich. I love that.
Well, so many business owners are exiting poor. And this, by the way, these statistics I gave you is way before COVID.
Yeah, a lot of they say that the average business lasts maybe 6 months after the patriarch of that business dies, and that's the reason
that's true,
and it falls under exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, that's so, very true.
So you have something that's called the ST6P method. It's a big thing that you talk about and selling your business with huge
priority. It's half my book.
It's half your book.
And
this
much.
Is now this is your second book that you just came out.
It's actually
my
third book.
Your third book. Mm-hmm. Oh wow. Well, so selling your business for huge profits. Now, can you tell us how these six P's are why they are and why they're tell us about them and why are they so important?
Yeah. So let me run you through the six P's. So first and foremost, one of the most important P's, you know, they're all important, but one of the most important P's is people. You don't build a business, you build people, and people build the business. So many business owners are so busy working in their business and doing sales and doing customer service and doing billing and, you know, doing everything themselves that the business cannot run without them. So what they've created is a glorified job, not an actual business. So you need to have people. Entrepreneurs need to focus on their strengths, hire their weaknesses, put the right people in the right seats, the right positions, and ask the who question. Who opens the door? Who deals with customer service? Who deals with marketing? Who deals with legal, accounting, manufacturing, transportation, logistics, environmental? The list goes on and on. The clue, Daniel, is you should never be next to the who, because you want to create a business that runs without you so you can get on your yacht and enjoy your time with all of your girls, whatever it is you have.
No, and I'm only using the yacht because, you know, that's what a lot of people, they're like, I'm going to build this business and I'm going to be on yachts and I'm going to be doing this. It's like, well, that you can do that. That's great. But so anyways, that's the reason why I dangle the yacht. It's like, well, how the hell are you going to be on a yacht if you're actually working? You're the one that has to run
your
business.
You're not. So Exit Rich is not just about selling your business. It's really about building sustainable, scalable business. And when you're ready, you actually have a sellable asset. Very important. Okay. So that's people. You got to have the right people. Second P is product. So product is your service, your industry. You need to ask yourself, is your industry or product on the way up or on the way out? Is it thriving or dying? Do you have an Amazon or do you have a Blockbuster? And if you have an Amazon, great, more power to you. If you have a Blockbuster and you're in a dying industry, maybe because of the pandemic, that doesn't mean you just pack up and go home and curl up in a fetal position and die. Yeah. That means you actually have to do something. So you have to, you know, I always tell my clients, you really have to get out of transactional and become transformational and ask yourself, you know, these questions, because true change comes from the questions we ask. So ask yourself, what business am I in? You know, Amazon did this in the 90s. They asked themselves, what business am I in? And I said, oh, we're in a book selling business. We sell books. And then they asked themselves, what do we do really well, better than anybody else? And they said, oh, we do fulfillment better than anyone else. And the third question, the most obvious question, should be, what business should I be in? And their question was, what business should we be in? And they said, fulfillment. We shouldn't just sell books. We should sell everybody's products. So those three transformational questions, as simple as they sound, transformed Amazon to a small book-selling company, to a multi-billion-dollar worldwide conglomerate that they are today.
And now even the trucking, because I was like, you know, how they did that was pretty amazing because, you know, they're using FedEx, they're using UPS. And, I mean, you know, to come out with your own trucking system is a very bold move because, you know.
Well, they're also buying airplanes, which is another bold move. That's
Variable.
Another bold move, but they're constantly innovating. Remember AIM. So AIM is needs to be implemented under the product, under the P products more than anything else, because you always got to innovate. You always got to innovate how you do things. Under processes is the next P. But you always got to innovate how you do things. Innovate how you deal with your clients. You know, what type of business you're in. You know, innovation is the name of the game. Without innovation and marketing, you're nothing. You're either growing or dying. There is no in between. So Amazon is on top because they constantly innovate. They constantly look to do things better. And they market those innovations. You know, they make sure that the world knows what they're coming up with. Mm-hmm. Right?
That way they're actually putting like a market test in a sense, small sample of a market test to see if it's going to work. And then once they realize it is, then boom, they go with it quickly.
The third P is processes. So processes is big. Processes are typically like an exit strategy. Most business owners don't think about it until something bad has happened. Mm-hmm. And processes really should be designed from the beginning of starting your company or buying a company. And most businesses don't think about processes until something bad has happened. Like I have a client right now who's employee got hurt on the manufacturing floor. It's a catastrophic event. So lawsuits are coming down. They're probably going to file bankruptcy and go out of business. And the owner said to me, I need a policy for, we need a policy and procedure manual for the operation floor, for the manufacturer, for health and safety. And I'm like, you're a little late. You needed that before this catastrophic event occurred. So processes should really be designed with the customer experience in mind. They should be productive and efficient. Here's what I mean by a customer experience. So many business owners get this wrong. They design their processes around their own agenda. You know, if they want to sail away on a yacht, then they're going to design their processes around their days on the yacht. Let me explain. Chiropractors, perfect example. Chiropractors, sometimes dentists, service providers. Their hours are always scheduled around their own agenda, what they want to do. So chiropractors are open like Monday, Wednesday through Friday, 9 to 11, closed 11 to 2. They open back up at 3 to 5, and then they have weird hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and nobody can ever remember their hours. Is that designed with the customer experience in mind?
Nope.
No. That's designed with their own agenda. So McDonald's got this right a long time ago, back in the 40s. McDonald's brother said, did you ever watch the movie The Founder?
I have a memory like a, well, anyways, maybe.
You need to watch the movie The Founder based on McDonald's and the Ray Kroc story. Anyway, McDonald's started McDonald's way back then and said, we're going to design a fast food restaurant around the customer's experience. We want customers to experience great tasting food that's hot, fast. They never said it's going to be organic. They never said it's going to be healthy. They never said you're going to get superior customer service either, because you don't at most McDonald's. So, but you do get good tasting food. French fries are the best. That's hot, fast, right? We can all agree upon that. So you
and they, but they recently have shifted to all natural now, except for the pickles. They can't find a pickle that doesn't have artificial color. But anyways, but they're doing great.
So they are. So you can, but what I want the focus to be here is the experience. You can eat at McDonald's anywhere in the world and get the same experience because they designed their processes around the customer experience, not the processes around their own agenda. Does that make sense?
It makes
total Have you ever dealt with a company or a bank or maybe a social media company where you can't get your problem resolved and you email, you message, and there's no phone number to call, or you call and you talk to 10 different people and nobody can resolve your problem? Have you ever been through that?
Yeah, usually it's a small company that's growing too fast.
That's not true. Facebook. Perfect example.
They don't have enough money though to answer the calls. They don't. I mean, because there's you know what I'm saying though.
But
they didn't build that infrastructure, did they?
But you got to have the infrastructure designed with the customer experience in mind. Otherwise, you're going to lose market share. Mm-hmm. If you don't take care of your clients, somebody else will. Just remember that. So your processes must be designed with the customer experience in mind, efficient, productive. And you must have policy and procedure manuals, SOP checklists, employee handbooks, non-competes. All of these documents have to be intact when a buyer comes to look at your business. Plus, it's going to make you sustainable, these processes. It's going to help you to scale. Okay. The next P, which is the most valuable P, which is the highest multiple driver, is proprietary. You have a question?
No, I'm just like, bless you. This is awesome. You know, everyone's listening going, I'm ready for the next P. This is awesome.
Oh, proprietary. So let me give you just a really quick crash course. Now, this is not even a course yet. You can have me back on to talk about this, but how businesses are evaluated. So businesses with $1 million in EBITDA, with businesses under $1 million in EBITDA, EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, under $1 million in EBITDA will trade anywhere between 2 to 4 times multiple typically. If they're going to get 5, they have to have some really good synergies in place. Okay. So typically 2 to 4 multiple. So EBITDA over $1 million typically will trade at a 5 or above multiple. Now the fourth P is proprietary. There's 6 pillars to proprietary. So this is going to take me a little while. Wow. The next P's are shorter, but there's 6 P's. Get this right. And you will get a higher price for the sale of your business. Number one is branding. The more well-branded you are, the more I can sell your company for, as long as your brand is relevant in the mind of the consumers. Is anybody paying any money for Blockbuster?
Well, only because of artificially inflated information, right?
Nobody's paying any money for Blockbuster brand. They're not. Blockbuster never pivoted. They never aimed. They saw Netflix. They saw the writing on the wall. They had the opportunity to buy Netflix. They sat back fat and happy and did nothing. So that's why they're out of business. The most valuable brand in the world right now is?
I'm just guessing. I mean, Amazon?
Well, you're right in the A's. Apple.
Apple.
Apple is worth $249 billion. That's just a brand. That's not the inventory, assets, and receivables, cash flow. That's just a brand, $249 billion.
And
so branding is huge.
Extremely profitable.
They are. So build your brand, and you will be able to sell your company for a tremendous amount of money. Trademarks are huge. Buyers like to buy IP that's protected. So trademark your company name, trademark your podcast, trademark Exit Rich, which I did. Trademark the ST6Ps, STGPS exit model. Anything that is your USP, which is your unique selling proposition, should be trademarked. But here's the caveat. You don't need a state trademark. You need a federal trademark. Okay. Now, the biggest mistake the business owners make, okay, you're in Texas. They go to Texas. They're like, oh, I got this new business. I'm going to start up. I got this great name. Yes, I found it on GoDaddy. I'm so excited. And then they go to Texas and they get the LLC. But they make the huge mistake of never checking the federal database. So they can be in business for several years and all of a sudden receive a letter in the mail that says you have to stop using this company name. It's just this letter. And then they got to hire an attorney, throw a bunch of money at it to lose because they're going to lose and all that good. So spend $1,500 to $2,000. Get a federal trademark on your podcast, on your company name, etc. Because otherwise, if you have to stop using your company name that you spent 15, 20 years building, now you're starting over from scratch. So make sure you protect that. Also, if you have any products that are unique, you know, we're selling a company that has all these different products and they have a federal trademark on each product and they have discourse use for train. Let's say Rouse's has this product and Kroger has this product and Alpha Beta in California has this product, right? That's huge because other competitors and strategics, there's five types of buyers, they want to pay, they will pay more money for those trademarks. Same thing with patents. If you ever watch Shark Tank, every investor always asks the same question. Do you have a patent on this? Do you have a patent pending? Do you have a utility patent? They'll make an offer contingent upon the patent. So protect your IP. Contracts, manufacturing, distribution contracts, vendor contracts, exclusive contracts, franchisor contracts with franchisees, client contracts, especially if they have a reoccurring revenue stream or subscription model, are extremely valuable to buyers. Here's the caveat. Here's the biggest mistake. Because you asked me at the beginning of the show, Michelle, what's the biggest mistake business owners make? Well, I'm giving them all to you right now, is that business owners don't protect their contracts because 99.9% of all sales are asset sales. And business owners don't put that transferability clause in their contract. So unless a buyer agrees to do a stock sale, in many cases they won't, or the client won't do a transfer to consent to transfer, then you're in big trouble. Let me tell you a quick story. Franchisor had 1,500 franchisees. So to a private equity group, I was not the M&A advisor on this one. They did their due diligence, never looked at the contracts to make sure the transferability clause was there. They did a big old dog and pony show after the close to tell the franchisees. No transferability clause was in those contracts. It was an asset sale. Out of 1,500 franchisees, only two transferred over.
Oh, wow.
They lost everything because they paid millions for this business. They filed bankruptcy and they went after all the attorneys. So I'm here to tell you, cross your T's, dot your I's, read Exit Rich. Make sure you don't make these mistakes. And then databases are huge. Like you could be losing money in your company and have these proprietary assets and still be able to sell your business for more money. Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp. And WhatsApp was making how much money?
Zero. They're still not profitable, right?
They were not just making zero. They were actually hemorrhaging.
Oh, yeah.
No, hemorrhaging. But well, they had
Facebook is still not profitable yet.
But, I know.
But their database is worth billions.
but they have a synergy, and that synergy is their database. So Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp. Celebrity endorsements are big because competitors are strategics. So we have a business that's being endorsed by Oprah, and And competitors and strategics will eat that up because they want to get their products in front of Oprah. Everybody wants their products endorsed by Oprah. She's the queen of all. She's the queen of everything. Yeah. You know?
Yeah,
so celebrity endorsements are huge. Radio personalities are huge. So if you have a Glenn Beck, I used to say Rush Limbaugh. Unfortunately, he passed away. Yeah. But, you know, the Kid Craddock Show, any celebrity endorsement on radio or even TV is huge because they can only endorse one vertical at a time, only one skincare, only one diet plan, only one supplement company, because they'll lose credibility. So this is what we call
like a golfer can only wear one watch at a time, right?
Right. You know, this is what we call primetime digital real estate. Same thing with e-commerce businesses. We sell a lot of e-commerce businesses. If you have the number, if you have the top three positions on Etsy, or Wayfair, or Amazon, that's money. Mm-hmm. Buyers will pay a lot more money for these synergies. So I always say build these synergies because when we sell businesses, when we value businesses, one of the biggest things we do is we take our clients through the six P's and we really put a value on these synergies. And then we find the buyers that are willing to pay top dollar for these synergies. And then we find buyers that can take advantage of economies of scale. And then we find the buyers that can cut overhead by cutting out a distribution center, maybe. You know, let's say we're selling a manufacturing company that has one distribution center. It's you know, costing them $1 million a year to operate. But this manufacturing company has distribution all over the United States. So the first thing they can cut is that distribution center cutting $1 million off of their top line, which increases their EBITDA.
Yeah.
Right. So the last P, not the last P, the fifth P is patrons. And this is your client base. You know, I always say in US, 80% of our business comes from 20% of our clients. So if you have customer concentration, it could be deadly because if you lose a couple of clients, you could literally go out of business. We once were selling that oil manufacturing business, appraised in the $9.8 million range. They had 65% of their revenues tied up in the BP contract. We had 550 buyers. We got it down to 12 letter of intents, LOIs. All of our LOIs buyers were extremely concerned with customer concentration. So they were going to do extensive due diligence. And then we found one buyer that had a similar product and service. And he said, I don't care. I've been trying to get my products into BP for decades. You know, if I buy this company, I got my foot in the door. So he paid $15 million for a company that was appraised for $9.8 million. $15 million for 70% of the company. That's 126% more than the appraised asking price.
But he did that because of what value he could use that for.
I did that because I know what I'm doing. And I created a bidding war, which is what I do for my clients. And we're, on average, we get our clients 20, 40% more than what the business appraises for. So the last P is profits, the most important P to all of us, because we're all in business to make that money so we can go sell away on our yachts that you talked about earlier. But the reason I put profits last is because profits is never the problem. Lack of profits is never the problem. It's always a symptom of not having one of the other five P's, not operating one of the other five P's. I have clients that come to me and say, Michelle, I have a profits problem. I'm like, no, you have a people problem, or no, you have a process problem. So if you're not making money, that's not your problem. Go back and look. Do you have the right people in the right place? Are you in a dying product or a thriving product? Is your process as productive and efficient? Are you upsetting clients and losing market share because your processes are all based upon you and not based upon your client experience? You know, profits is never the problem, always a symptom.
I love it. That's awesome. Yeah, I would. What would you say though, that the lack of the process or SOPs or the lack of choosing wisely? A lot of times managers are like, well, I guess I'll just choose this person. I'll settle, like settling for a guy or settling for a girl. You know what I mean? But which do you think it is? Because I personally am thinking it's more of the SOPs, the standard operating procedures that companies, they don't think about designing all of that. But I could be wrong. But that's my experience. How about you?
So what do I think what is? I'm trying to understand your question.
The question is like, do you think that more companies need to be educated on SOPs versus hiring?
Versus hiring?
Yeah. Is hiring more of a problem for the companies that you've ran into, or is it more that they never had their standard operating procedures in
place? It's both. It's really both. Pretty much neck and neck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
so they don't have the right people. And here's the thing. entrepreneurs are visionaries, right? We're like, we got this idea and this idea and this, and we got all these ideas. We're visionaries. We're not implementers. We're not integrators. So every entrepreneur has to have a good integrator. The problem is we're short of integrators in the U.S. If we're going to develop anything, we need more integrators. We don't necessarily need more visionaries. We need more integrators. So we're short of integrators. And yeah, you can have a great hiring process, but at the end of the day, if you know the people that you put in charge don't really know how to implement, you know, what the visionary is coming up with, and making sure those processes are designed with the customer experience in mind, making sure that, you know, they're airtight, et cetera. If you don't have a person that's been trained on that, because that's an art, you know, that really is a skill. That really is an art. And most entrepreneurs are terrible process people. And so you really need a good integrator or a good COO, somebody who really can fine tune those processes. So I really think it goes hand in hand. It goes with getting the right person to make sure that they have the right experience to get nail down those and button up those processes.
Hire well within the skill sets. If you lack in that skill set, innovators or idea people sometimes lack in the processes, what you're saying. Right. So hire well. Don't hire someone just like you, because if you do, then no one's going to get those.
Well, that's a problem too. That's like the big problem, because so many business owners want to hire people they like. Mm-hmm. Listen, go have drinks with people you like. Don't hire people you want to go have drinks with. Hire people that are really going to get the job done and be the best people, and you know, for those skills, and hire your weaknesses. Most business owners want to hire people that are like them. They don't want to hire above them because they're intimidated or they're insecure, or maybe they lack the confidence, or they lack control. You know, most entrepreneurs are control freaks. Yeah, and they want to control everything. So they're afraid, well, if I hire somebody above me, then I can't control that person. Here's the bottom line. You will never grow unless you let go of control.
You'll never grow unless you let go of control. I like it.
Yep.
So now I think we covered a lot of, this is great stuff. Thank you so much, Michelle, for this. But what are some key things that you should look for? Say if someone says, hey, I like what Michelle is saying here. What are some key things they should look for in a mergers and acquisition advisor?
Yep. So that's a good question, because, you know, it's like attorneys. There's good attorneys, bad attorneys. There's good doctors, bad doctors, you know, and your business to me is similar to having an operation. So if a doctor says, you know what, Daniel, you need heart surgery. You're going to go out there, you're going to do research, and you're going to find the best heart surgeon, right? You're not going to cut up your chest, pull out your heart, and operate on yourself. Well, you're not going to hire a doctor that just graduated from college and just finished his internship. You're not going to, you know, and same thing with your business.
An eye doctor for your heart. You're not going
to. That's right. So same thing with a business. Don't, you know, you really need to, you know, figure out what kind of business you have. If you have a pizzeria, coffee shop, yeah, go check out business brokers. Interview business brokers. Business brokers typically sell much smaller businesses. If you want to sell a business, you know, $5 million, $10 million, $15 million, $20 million, $50 million, $100 million, you need a mergers and acquisitions advisor. You need to ask.
Just like hiring. I mean, a lot of these businesses, when they start out, they're not making that much money, and they won't hire a lawyer. And it's like, you have to have a lawyer.
Well, just like you got to get a federal trademark.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And your lawyer can do that for you too. I mean, you know, file those.
Well, a lawyer is the one who should do it for you. You don't want to go down the rabbit trap of checking the government website and then hiring online. That never works out well. So
there's multiple partners. You have to have an attorney because,
right,
you know, if you could write something in a contract.
I have five different attorneys I work with for different things. I have three different CPAs. So you have to have the right professionals on your team. We talk about people, and you just brought up a good point, because people in your business, the right people in the right position, the who question, you know, making sure you've answered the who question.
I like that who question. That's good.
But then you got to have the right partner. So an attorney, a CPA, maybe a financial advisor. You know, you're going to have the right partners. For me, I have attorneys. I have CPAs I've been working with for 20 years. And I tell my clients, if you want to work with me, you have to work with my partners. And if you don't agree, then I'm not your M&A advisor, because attorneys kill deals. My team are deal makers, not deal breakers. So you got to make sure you have the right team in place. I forgot what the question was.
Oh, you answered it perfectly.
Okay, good.
Of course. You and I, I'm telling you off camera, you and I could talk about all kinds of stories of businesses. Cause I mean, it's crazy what we've seen throughout time, but
it is.
But I've never dealt with, I've helped in the sell of a few different businesses. Oh. And so I've actually exited one of my, two of my other businesses. But your experience, I feel so grateful to talk to someone that's been doing this, but on a such greater level in the multi-million dollar businesses. There's just one other question our analogy is I was thinking if you were able to help some of those clothing companies, because you notice how it's like we grew up, we had The Gap and we had different clothing stores, JW West. But a lot of these, they're gone. Every last one of them, because when their kids grew up, they didn't want to wear mom and dad's clothes. They didn't want to wear grandpa's clothes. Actually, they kind of do want to wear grandpa's clothes, but you know, sometimes they have to wear something, you know, different. But the things that you talked about in the show can really help people to understand how they have to be innovative, not just at the beginning now, but later on, because things can change. 7 years. I always tell people that when it comes to naming your company, don't worry about the name. The name's not important, especially if some people choose their name with the product that they're selling. Well, what happens 7 years when that product is not popular anymore? You're going to shift into another product. Well, that's a stupid name to choose if your name is the product, right? So, those are some amazing things you shared with us. We really do appreciate you. Now, how can people find you if they're ready to scale their business the proper way, or to set up their business so that way they can sell it and make some money?
One thing I wanted to do real quick is comment on what you just said on the clothing stores and the retailers. And it's like Toys R Us. I mean, Toys R Us went out of business because they did nothing different in 75 years. Same thing with Gap, same thing with Gas, same thing with BCBG is going out of business, you know, same thing with BB, you know, a lot of these companies are going out of business because they stopped innovating. Number one, here's the things you got to look at. You got to look at what's the customer want as their experience, because it's all about experiences. You have to identify who your ideal client is, what your customer acquisition cost is, and how, you know, what do they want? So the reason these retailers are going out of business is because nobody wants to go to the mall anymore. Nobody wants to go to the store anymore, especially with millennials. You know, the younger generation wants an experience. They want to go out and live. They want to do things, you know, and not just live the shop. And so that's why Amazon is so successful, because whoever makes it easiest for the consumer to purchase products and services is a company that's going to win. Amazon is winning because they make it so easy to purchase their products and services, whereas the retailers don't. And if you want to stay in business like Godiva Chocolate, create an experience around chocolate. You know, just like FAO Schwarz Toy Store in New York, they ended up going out of business, and so did Toys R Us, because they weren't creating the experiences for children. In order to get these customers back to retail locations, you've got to create experience around the buying. You got to create experience for them. And you got to make it easy for them to purchase products and services. If they don't want to come to a store and I want to go online and maybe I saw some dress on the runway, I'm like, oh, killer, I want that dress. I just saw that dress at the Grammys. I want that dress. I ought to be able to go to the internet. I ought to be able to scan that dress in, right? And be able to go to a retailer that's selling that dress. And they have a picture of me, tells me what color looks best on me. They already have my body measurements and show me pictures of that dress right then and there that I can buy.
This
is what things have to go to. This is how we have to innovate. This is how we have to evolve. And we have to have small business, because if we lose small business, we lose half the U.S. workforce. When you lose jobs, you lose spending power. When you lose spending power, more jobs close. More businesses close, I mean.
Yeah. Which includes jobs after that.
Right. So how can people get me? So first and foremost, I think everybody needs to go out and get Exit Rich, don't you?
Yes. Let's buy the book, guys. Exit Rich.
Buy the book. So the book is launching in June, but you don't have to wait till June. I don't want any of your listeners to wait till June. So I have a special offer for your listeners. First and foremost, they can go to exitrichbook.com. And for $24.79. Less than the price of a steak. $24.79.
That's a deal.
We will email them the digital download immediately within minutes. So have the digital download so they can start reading it today. We'll ship the hardcover to your doorstep to anybody inside the United States. Okay. Outside the U.S., you have to pay extra for shipping, of course. You will give you a lifetime membership into the Exit Rich Book Club. Well, we have video content. So if everybody likes what they're hearing here, there's more of this at Exit Rich Book Club, more of me doing video training. Plus, we have documents. So we have documents to operate your business, documents to sell your business. So we have sample employee handbook, sample non-compete, sample organizational charts, policy and procedure manuals, sample LOIs, letter of intents, purchase agreements, due diligence checklist, closing docs. All these documents will cost you over $30,000 if you want your attorney to recreate all. They're there for your review and download, all for $24.79. Plus, we will give you a 30-day membership into Club CEOs, which is a entrepreneur mastermind where we really help business owners ask those transformational questions and build their business so it is sustainable, scalable, and when you're ready, sellable.
Oh, that is so nice.
That's a lot of value for $24.79.
Well, and think about it. So if any of this information has seemed overwhelming to those listening to the show, then that fear can be extinguished by buying this book because she has over $30,000 worth of documents. So you can familiarize yourself and she takes you step by step. So that way you can feel comfortable and the fear goes away. And then you're put into a position where you can sell that the business and make exit rich. There we go.
Plus you get time with me at Club CEOs.
Oh, wow. So people can actually spend time at Club CEOs.
Yes.
So do you do that once a week or once a month?
I do it once. I typically do it once every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. That's good. Yep. Bi-monthly.
So they can also text Michelle to 888-526-5750. And when you text me, all my social media pops up. So follow me on social media, connect with me on LinkedIn. All my websites pop up. My main website is silotucker.com.
And she's a firecracker on her video. So be sure to check out her YouTube videos because it's a lot of fun. And it's a lot of great information. So if you want to be inspired and get excited about what you're doing, then definitely check out your Michelle Siler Tucker's videos.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
So that was my interview with Michelle. And wasn't she full of great information? Isn't it nice to think that if you're an entrepreneur, when you're building a business, we're not creating a job, but we want to create a business that we can sell and exit rich. So she was full of great information. And again, if you haven't done so, follow her on her social medias and watch some of her videos. And if you're looking to sell your business, she's going to be a great person for you. Now, you may have wondered, why do I look different from the last time that you were watching the Dream Job Radio? Well, yes, I did shave my beard and mustache. And that's because my wife and I renewed our vows and I wanted her to marry the younger version of me. So if you're an entrepreneur, I'm sure that's the reason why you're listening to the show. We're going to be keeping the format focused mostly on entrepreneurs and how to grow your business and to make some smart decisions and to make less mistakes and to make more money. So keep checking back. If you're watching this on YouTube and you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the channel and hit the bell and share this with one of your fellow friends that's starting their business, because we need each other to grow our communities and to stay inspired. And this way together, we're going to grow and build our futures together. So until the next Dream Job Radio show, keep growing and I'll see you.